When I was 11 years old, a family friend took me to the theater to give my parents a much-needed break and get me and my brother out of the house for a few hours. On this particular occasion, I was treated to an ensemble comedy that also happened to be a murder mystery. Even at 11, I had a huge fondness for whodunit mystery movies like And Then There Were None, and for a bonus, this one was a zany comedy, practically perfect for an 11-year-old. I always remembered this movie even deep into adulthood, but was often surprised to find that no one else had ever heard of it.
Like me.
When I recommended people finally check it out, no one ever watched it.
Like me.
So thus, here we are, at the end of a long road where I can finally, at long last, force another human being to sit down and watch this fucking movie with me. I'm gonna tie Nelson to a goddamn chair if I have to. And I can at long last find out if the movie I loved as a kid is just as good as I remember. And that movie was Once Upon a Crime.
Welcome to the holdup. Each month we pick a movie one of us remembers fondly but hasn't seen in years, watch it and decide, does it hold up? I'm John Nelson.
And I'm John Longino.
And hey, it's December and everything is back to normal.
Yes, it's just like a Christmas carol. It's like we've woken up from a slumber. I'm leaping out of bed. What day is it, Mr. Nelson? What day?
It's Christmas Day, John Longino.
I feel like I was looking forward to recording tonight in a way that I haven't in a while. Not that I don't enjoy this, but there's a lighthearted fun about me that I feel like some kind of weight is lifted. I can't quite quantify it or give it a name of exactly what it is. I just feel really good.
Well, before we get started, folks, you can reach us at holduppodcast@gmail.com or you can go to holduppodcast.com, visit all of our social media sites. But why would you do that? Because social media is trash.
Nelson, I do want to challenge some of our listeners to, I know you're out there, at least I think you are. Our inbox has been a little barren lately. Sometimes silence is its own reward. Like, people are just sort of satisfied and no notes. I don't know, but I challenge listeners to send us a couple of emails. I miss hearing from y'all, and I would love to hear some more.
Or if you haven't written in, and you're one of our quiet fans, I guess, or quiet haters, please write in and tell us so, because, you know, we'd love to hear from you. We want to know where our voices extend to.
Perhaps we need some more prize bait. I mean, it is Christmas. I am in the giving mood.
Oh, do you have something you can give people if they write in?
It's a mystery prize, but okay. I'm going to offer a mystery prize to our sixth email that we receive.
Here we go again.
Six email gets a prize. Here we go. Let's shamelessly get some email.
If you have won a contest before, and that means there's only one of you, then you are not eligible for the mystery prize. Please do not spam us unless you have something really funny you want to spam
clarify,
us with.
To clarify, recent emails from the same person over and over again do not count. These are unique emails.
Yeah, if you want to spam us with 12 emails, that counts, but it can't just be one word a piece. Got to get more creative this time.
No, it does not count. No.
Oh, no? Okay.
So the sixth unique person that emails us.
Okay.
So not from the same person.
Just the sixth person to email us. No.
The sixth unique person.
Repeats don't count, folks. All right. The gauntlet has been thrown.
Merry
John
Christmas.
Longino.
Happy holidays.
John Longino's got some swag for you. Well, then, with that out of the way, let's move on to tonight's movie, Once Upon a Crime. John Longino, why?
Why Once Upon a Crime? Well, one, you challenged us to kind of lift our spirits after the political season and have some fun for December. Unfortunately, we couldn't really think of a Christmas film to watch because we've kind of watched all the good ones for it.
Well, that's the thing. There's only like so many Christmas movies left on the possible list, and I think like two of them are Lethal Weapons. So, I mean, I don't know.
You refuse to watch Ernest Saves Christmas, so I don't really know what to do.
I just want to make sure there's a buffer between the Ernest movies. That's all.
Yes. But this film, Once Upon a Crime, has been just kind of on my bucket list to kind of kick around for this podcast. I think it's very appropriate for this podcast. In that I remember it being really good. I saw it when I was a kid. I have fond memories of it. But, like, it's definitely open to interpretation. How good is good? And I feel like this is one of those just lost, like, comedies of the 90s that no one really remembers.
90s.
Speaking of which, yes, 90s.
Got it.
Speaking of not remembering, what do you know anything about this movie? I know you haven't seen it.
This is one of those movies, I have not seen it. This is one of those movies that the only thing I know about it is the title, and it's one of those that I have only seen, like, in passing. Like, I know the title existed, because when you said it, I was like, oh, yeah, I've heard of that. But I know nothing else about it. Honestly, the only thing I know about it besides what you gave away in the intro is that John Candy was in it, because I had to look it up to see where I was watching it tonight.
Correct.
That, unfortunately, I feel like is kind of a spoiler in and of itself, that tonally, that
sure.
is a certain kind of comedy. But beyond that, I mean... There's much that can happen, because John Candy was in a wide variety of comedies, all the way from, you know, slapsticky and, let's phrase it, shitty, to, you know, highfalutin and more subtle. So I guess there's a lot of wiggle room. But I mean, as far as it goes, it's like, once you say, well, it's a mystery comedy, then it's like, well, okay, I'll bet somebody dies in it and they have to solve the crime. Is there a detective in it of some kind? I mean, that's my guess, is that, you know, somebody plays a detective, and whether that's John Candy or somebody else, it would be interesting to me if there was a detective who was not the main character and things were, mm-hmm. you know, going on around him. I always kind of like those ideas, but...
Sure. Before I get into what I remember about Once Upon a Crime, I just, for funsies, I want to, you know, I don't know how accurate you'll be, but if you just had to pitch the log line, the movie, what do you think the movie is? What's the plot?
Let's see. A mob boss is killed in Michigan, and all of the other crime bosses have to solve the mystery or a gang war will start. How close am I?
Not very close.
Okay.
But I mean, you're right that someone dies. You're
well,
correct there.
Sure. Like, you know, an infant could have figured that one out. Sure.
Yes.
Murder mystery.
So now it has been a while since I've seen the movie. This is one that I saw in, it was released in 1991. And I saw it in the theater at 11 years old. And then probably 10, 15 years later, maybe around sometime between like 2001, 2005, 2006, somewhere around there.
Okay.
I dusted it off and gave it another viewing. Now, that was still anywhere from 14 to 16 years ago or something. So it's once again been a while.
See,
but,
here's the thing. I mean, before you tell me what it's about, I got to tell
sure.
you, if you had said that this movie was made in 82, 89, somewhere in the 80s, late 70s, I would think to myself, it's probably got a good chance of being funny and good. For some reason, comedy was poison in the 90s, especially with the 80s crew that was sort of, you know, hanging on tooth and nail to their, like, you know, cachet. I don't know how to describe it, but like the John Candys, the Chevy Chases, the, you know, that
sure.
crowd, they were on the way out, and the stuff that they were given to do was not very funny. I mean, there's all
sure.
exceptions abound. There are lots of funny movies that these people were in, even to this day.
Right.
But
well, I think the following information will probably paint a much clearer picture for you than the vagary we've been talking about, because this movie is kind of half an like Second City kind of thing. Like, so it's directed
okay.
by Eugene Levy, for
right.
one.
Okay. Well, then it definitely has that like 80s Ghostbuster-y,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So you got your John Candy, you have your Jim Belushi. So not John Belushi, but the lesser Belushi, who obviously has ties to Second City
the,
stuff.
The lesser Belushi, who's gone on to make 150 more films than his deceased brother.
I know. But when
poor
you're
Jim
you know,
Belushi,
you're...
that man gets like no love. But I, you know, everybody's like, well, John Belushi made like 10 films, and he was great in like one of them. You know what I mean? It's like he's only been in like
right.
10 movies, and only two of them are maybe good. I don't
right.
know.
That's fair. I think it's just more. He's more like this legendary. Remember, I mean, he was in Animal
yes.
House and Blues Brothers.
Right.
You know, people really remember that. And I don't think Jim Belushi ever had a hit on those levels like that John Belushi did. But regardless, he's in it. But what's also really cool, the movie has a lot of strong female characters from what I remember. Sybil Shepherd is
oh,
in
okay.
it.
Nice.
Sean Young is
oh,
in
wow.
this movie.
Nice.
And also Richard Lewis is in the movie.
Oh, okay. We're backing away again.
So we're going 90s comedy. Well, I actually love... So what's interesting is this movie is my introduction to Richard Lewis. Like, okay. I never... Because keep in mind, I'm 11 when it comes out, so it's not like I'd seen any of his stand-up or anything.
His stand-up is really funny. I have to say, like, I mean, when you say Richard Lewis, I say to myself, well, if it's his stand-up or something, like, where he's in a side part where he's really good, he can be great. It's just that for whatever reason, the movies where he's more front and center, not good.
So. I found him to, and maybe I'll eat my words, but I found him to be quite fantastic in this movie. Okay. Like, maybe one of the funniest parts in the movie. It's so the vibe of the movie is it's in Monte Carlo. In Europe.
Are you sure it's not Michigan? And, not Detroit.
No.
It starts with an M, though, so there. I was close.
So they're in Europe, in Monte Carlo, and it's one of those kind of similar to like Mad Mad World or Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag. It's sort of this like ensemble cast of buffoons sort of all get wrapped up into a mystery involving a deceased woman who was murdered at a mansion or something.
Okay.
And I think it's classic, like, I think they all have an invitation to attend a party there or something like that. Very like House on Haunted Hill or something, where they don't know each other, but they're supposedly going to this party where this woman
so
dies.
So it's basically Clue, but without the board game tie-in.
Yes. Yeah, very Clue-like. Yes.
They saw that Clue made some money, and they're like, well, we can do that.
Yeah. Probably, honestly, that would make sense. There is an inspector. It's a French inspector. He's a French actor as well. I do not recall his name, although you will see him. He's a character actor, and you will recognize him.
Okay.
Who's, like, smoking cigarettes and trying to figure out who committed the murder, you know, like that kind of thing. But there's a lot of, like, pods of people who kind of intercross each other. So it's like John Candy and his wife. John Candy's like a gambler or something, ex-gambler.
Okay.
Businessman who's stopped gambling. Then there are crew. Sybil Shepherd and Jim Belushi are a married couple vacationing in Europe, American couple.
Okay.
Richard Lewis and Sean Young are involved in this zany plot. Oh, that's what it is. You know what? I might be incorrect. They might not be invited to a party. It might just be through matters of serendipity and circumstance all get entangled in the same sort of mystery that's going on.
Oh, so less Clue than Agatha Christie.
Sure. Because okay. the plot I really remember is Sean Young and Richard Lewis are both trying to return a missing dog. So the deceased woman has a dog that is somehow missing, and they find it on the street, and it's one of these, like, they don't know each other, but there's a reward for this dog, so they go on a quest together. There's an argument over, like, who's going to return this dog, and then they try to do it together.
Okay,
And then find this woman dead in a mansion or whatever. So, like, all right. But that's what's going on. It's like all these weird pods and groups of people getting mixed up in zany comedy antics. There's also George Hamilton.
Oh, my God.
Is in this film basically playing himself.
Right. Like, well, I mean, he basically played himself in everything he was in, except Evel Knievel. Yeah.
So he's just smoking a long cigarette and in the antics. I think I kind of maybe have painted a picture where you can sort of understand more what we're in for.
Right. Now, I mean, complete sidebar, but maybe interesting. We have both worked on a show with George Hamilton, have we not?
Correct. Okay. Stewart's and Hamilton.
Yeah,
yes.
You worked on the actual show I worked on the pilot that they tried to sell, and then once they sold it, it became something different, but George Hamilton was in both iterations. So
correct.
We both got a peek inside the inner workings of the George Hamilton clan, which is...
Well, it's funny you mention it, because when I was working on that show, all I was thinking about was this film. Once upon
really?
A time, because that was also my introduction to George Hamilton. I know him as the guy from this movie.
Okay, well,
because
that's
funny. I was 11 and I saw him in this movie.
Was it your child? Did you, when you started editing George Hamilton, were you like, the circle is now closed? My childhood dream finally accomplished. I can die a happy man.
Yes, absolutely. Honestly, kind of yes. Like he was the only thing I really enjoyed editing in that show, because I had this fondness for him from Once Upon a Crime.
Oh, man. That guy is something. George Hamilton. Yeah.
But my memories are like John Candy's fantastic. The problem is I'm not gonna tell you any specific scenes I remember and the jokes they're in, because it would frankly just kind of ruin the jokes.
Right.
But I remember some very funny scenes with John Candy. I remember some very funny scenes with Richard Lewis and Sean Young. Jim Belushi and Sybil Shepherd, I remember some stuff with them that's pretty funny. Like, really, it's like a very strong ensemble cast in a very funny movie. It doesn't get past probably B or B plus.
Okay.
Like, well, there's nothing here that's A, but it's like just a very solid funny movie from what I recall.
Okay. See, I have not. I mean, this is one of those that, I mean, blissfully, I have nothing to go on. Because, again, before I even looked at the thing tonight, I didn't even know John Candy was in it. And when I saw that, I was a little bit relieved, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I was like, to me, when you said Once Upon a Crime, the first thing that popped in my head, I was like, is that one of those movies that, like, Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau made? It was like one of the Neil Simon cast-off movies. I couldn't place it, but it sounded like that. So I have nothing.
Well, I guess my big question, besides comedy, so we, you know, obviously John Candy and comedy, you get it. What are your thoughts on mystery, whodunit, murder mystery stuff?
See, this is complicated for me. Some mysteries to me are like my favorite, like, films in life, like Chinatown, one of my favorite films, like, in life, and part of it is due to the mystery and the conventions that they blow up. And there's a lot of mystery movies and books and things like that that I really love, genuinely love. But I have discovered over the years that I actually don't care for mysteries that much in TV and books and things like that, simply because I feel like most of them don't go beyond the formula, you know? And I mean, part of it is like you can't help it, because it's like, well, there's only so many ways this can go. But I don't feel like, unless they really, like, the thing is, you can't blow a mystery wide open every time, because it's just not designed to do that. So if you have the same type of mystery every time, then it just gets boring to me. It's like, okay, who's the character we saw the least, the one who showed up first right, and was real benign and gave them just enough information to go down their way? That's the guy did it. Okay, great. Or, oh my God, it's we think it's a dude the whole way through, but it's really a woman. I mean, there's always, like, the thing to me is, like, most mysteries really, like, try and punch you with, like, the twists of, like, oh my God, who done it? Isn't this a shocker? And it's like, well, by virtue of it being a mystery, I'm looking at everyone, usually including the protagonist, even if I know, like, well, Perot is not going to be the murderer in this, even though I'm still thinking, but could he be? Could he have worked his way behind the scenes? So certain mysteries I love. Most mysteries I don't. Longtime listeners do know that I do love a crime film, and I don't need much in the way of variety for crime films, because I'm just fascinated with that. But mysteries, a different story.
Well, I think what I'm hearing, and it makes sense, is that sort of the more traditional formulaic, like, routine kind of structured mystery movie, especially, let's call it whodunit mystery movie, which is incredibly formulaic.
Right.
Obviously, you wouldn't call Chinatown a whodunit. Like, that is a detective movie.
Right.
So I think you like detective stories.
Yes.
But sort of whodunit murder mysteries, maybe not as much your cup of tea.
I think to put it in the simplest terms, now that you've said it, I think what you say is absolutely correct. And I can boil it down to, I like mysteries where the characters are sort of front and center, but most mysteries I feel like the plot is front and center.
Right.
Which is fine. Yes. There's plenty of movies where I'm wrong and the plot is just fine, but for the most part I really like the examination of character and, like, oh, why did this person, I mean, to me there's a lot of mysteries that, like, oh, you found out who did it and then you're just like, oh, well, I guess I have to take your word for it, because it just seems weird that that person would do it, and they don't really explain beyond a surface level, oh, I wanted vengeance for my brother or my sister, you know, just stuff like that.
Sure.
Where it's like, I would rather know from the beginning, oh, this guy did it, and figure out, well, why did he do it? What's going on in his head? Stuff like that.
Correct. Yes. So, no, you're 100% correct. It's like plot driven, not character driven. Not that there can't be good characters. There can.
Sure.
But yeah, I would say whodunit murder mysteries have more in line with, like, logic puzzles than they do narratives about character. And I think that's one thing that was really appealing about this movie to me, is that's just a genre minus the comedy that I have an affinity for.
Right.
I love Hercule Poirot, locked room murder mystery stuff. Those movies where, you know, everyone gathers in a room in the final act and someone goes on and on for 30 minutes about right. this is what happened. Very formulaic. I love that kind of stuff. I love Agatha Christie. I love that stuff. And I think that what's interesting is the sort of comedy version of that is something that comes along every 10 years or so. Like someone takes a crack at doing like a comedy mystery. I think most recently something like Knives Out.
Yes.
Is a very clearly in that vein of like, we're going to do a whodunit mystery and we're also going to make this a funny comedy.
But what I liked about Knives Out, I think it actually, walked that line of like character and plot. There was just enough character.
Correct.
You could sort of get behind the mystery of it. I felt like I was genuinely like, oh, well, I like this guy or I don't like this girl. Or I, you know, when Chris yes. Evans came in, I'm like, oh, I like him, but he's probably the guy. And then they're like, oh, maybe he could be, maybe, you know, it's like things like that about Knives Out. I really enjoyed. And I think the more you're kind of describing it, the more I think to myself, you know, what's interesting about mystery movies is like the first half hour is almost always really good because you're like, oh, anything's possible, the world right. sky's the limit, and your imagination runs wild. And as the movie goes on, I think that's, you know, where the rubber hits the road and like a good mystery is separated from a bad mystery, where you start knocking off the possibilities, when you start narrowing the tunnel. If the tunnel doesn't get like, you know, if you're not getting sweaty and anxious, which I don't for most mysteries, then I feel like, you know, then what's the point?
sure.
You should be feeling a tension of like, oh my God, well, there's only so many ways this can go and none of them are good. I hope nobody dies again. You know what I mean? Or I hope our, you know, our detective, our Sam Spade doesn't get killed.
Exactly. Yes. I know. Well, what's interesting about something like Once Upon a Crime, I wouldn't call this a ratcheting tension movie by
no,
any
well,
stretch.
I mean, comedy
there's
obviously blows
moments.
All that away.
Yes,
so.
Yes. Well, I'm fascinated by this sort of comedy mystery mix. Like Knives Out is one, Clue you mentioned, obviously one.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of movies like that. This movie is kind of in that vein, I feel like. Although I would say, given John Candy, Eugene Levy directing, lots of actors in it that are comedy actors, this one definitely veers more towards the comedy side
right.
than it would the mystery side. But what I found really fascinating when I first saw it is it had enough of a mystery for me to sort of be engaged and be trying to figure it out. And for some reason, movies that do that hold my attention.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm definitely never surprised when Longino says, hey, a mystery, let's do that. It's like when he said Once Upon a Crime, yeah. I was like, okay, yep, here we go.
Checks out.
It's a yes, Longino show.
I mean, you know, because you've played board games, like mystery board games with me and stuff. You know my deep affinity for bullshit plots
right.
and overly complicated, you know, mystery and
I mean,
wonder.
The thing I actually really love about Longino and mysteries is he usually makes the mystery far more interesting. Like, especially these games we play. We've played a lot of mystery board games where they're like, you know, they're sort of Sherlock Holmesian or whatever. There was one we played with John and his brother, and I swear to you, the game itself was like, it's fun enough. Watching these two go at it, it's this, no, it's this, and they would, for fucking hours, go on and on about all the possibilities, and there always came a point, like, in the second or third hour, where I would be like, okay, we're so off, you know, book now, there's no possibility that they're correct. However, I have to see where this goes. So I would just let them rant and rave and yell at each other and get
sure.
genuinely angry. That was the best part. You all would like have your fantasies and spit them out, and then you'd start getting mad at each other while you're spitting them out, which is, oh man, good times.
Well, maybe you can think this film, Once Upon a Crime, which me and my brother both saw as at 11 and 9, as sending us down the road.
Oh,
of
my.
Mystery,
I don't know. I don't know if I should, because then that just jacks it up to the highest level of expectation ever, which a 90s comedy with Eugene Levy and John Candy.
Oh, yes.
I don't know.
One thing I did want to talk about, though, and not that this movie has a ton of it, but what I just find interesting about mysteries in general is they're one of the few narratives that are incredibly meta with its sort of interaction between author and reader or viewer, you know, director
yeah.
and viewer, writer and viewer. Like quite often people who are fans of mysteries make mystery films to be consumed by people who are fans. And there's this weird escalation of like, you think I'm doing this, but I'm actually doing that. But you think that that's, it's like a crazy game of rock, paper, scissors or something.
Like, right.
I really think some of the best mystery movies have that element to it. Now, this movie is not a fucking 3D chess game by any stretch. But that interactivity of like, this is solvable. I'm giving you a puzzle. You need to kind of work it out. I think is really, really cool.
Well, the thing, I think you're right, but the thing, and maybe this spoiled me really early on, because Clue to me was like one of the movies that sort of pointed out to me, like in doing that meta thing, because they did a lot of, you know, meta jokes about mysteries, including like everybody kept dying and the bodies piled on top of bodies. And you're like, and the whole thing that they sold this movie on is, well, there's three different endings, three different killers. And somehow they managed to make it all work so that no matter which ending you watch, it's like, okay, all the pieces come together, which was good because it's like, that's a great movie. And I've seen it recently and that definitely holds up. But like, there was something to that that clicked in my brain. It's like, oh, these mysteries really are just interchangeable. It's like, that's why I started maybe appreciating the character stuff, because it's like, well, if you keep everybody's character sort of vague so that anybody could do it, then they become less interesting. They become more like tropes.
And, so. I think you're right. I think that does take a narrative to the next level, having really strong characters. Like we were talking about Knives Out. Knives Out is a film that while viewing that movie, I figured enough out about what was going on before maybe I was supposed to, but it didn't really matter because I enjoyed the movie on a character level enough to where, you know, that didn't ruin anything for me.
Well, I think that, I mean, Knives Out, we're talking about a whole different movie, but one of the things I liked about Knives Out was I think I kind of suspect the movie was set up for you to sort of get ahead of it a little bit so that you could then like go, oh, well, I think that again is a trope in and of itself. It's like, well, if I'm ahead of the movie, then this will happen, and then this will happen. And then it sort of played on that a little bit. I have no confirmation of this. This may all just be made up bullshit, but there was a point I feel like I had sort of a similar feel. It's like, oh, I see what he's doing here. Isn't it going to be, you know, wacky when we find out this? And then you find it out and it's not the biggest deal. So I was kind of like, oh, okay. Interesting. So,
yeah. Now, nothing so zany in this film, Once Upon a Crime. This is just pure comedy gold with a little salt and pepper of mystery, you know, sprinkled about. So,
oh, you know what other mystery comedies I liked? I mean, when I was a kid, I haven't seen them in ages. The Pink Panther ones. But you know why I like those?
I've never seen those.
You know, they're all more or less the same, and they have the same sort of the conceit on that one is that, like, yeah, it's a murder mystery, I guess, but really what you're doing is watching what's his name, Inspector Clouseau, you know, bump into things,
Peter
and jostle
Sellers.
Things and get his ass kicked and all this other stuff. Again, they're bending the conventions, and the mystery itself could, you know, take a flying leap. So I liked those as a kid. I actually haven't seen those in 30 years or whatever. They'd be interesting to revisit one day. But that's not what we're here to watch. We are not here to watch the Pink Panther. We're not watching Knives Out, although I kind of want to now. We're not watching Clue. We're watching Once Upon a Crime. And Longino, now's the time. They're in Monte Carlo,
excellent.
You say?
That's correct.
So let's gamble. Let's lay our bets. What do you think? Do you think Once Upon a Crime is going to hold up?
I think for me it will. I have no real worry there. I've seen this movie a few times and have enjoyed it every time I've seen it. So I think I have a fondness for it, especially since I saw it when I was young. It will hold up for me almost unquestionably. If it doesn't, well, what a surprise. I think the real question is going to be whether you like it or not, and that's what I'm more interested in.
Right.
Because I can't divorce my nostalgia and childhood love of this movie with what, and we've had this problem before.
Oh yeah.
I kind of need someone to objectively go, hey John, this movie sucks, or go, you know what, John, this movie is pretty good. So that's, I'm putting it on you.
Okay, well, I don't know if this will break your heart or if it'll just set us up for a happier second half, but I'm gonna say it does not hold up. Because all that I know is it's a 90s comedy with John Candy. Not the best genre of film, man. So I'm going to say doesn't hold up, you like it. So there's probably something there to enjoy, and hopefully I will. So, without further ado, let's jet off to Monte Carlo and watch Once Upon a Crime. We'll be right back.
There's been a murder!
Murder?
Murder?
Police!
Don't shoot, I'm an actor!
Wanted. An unemployed actor.
My name, Balboa. Rocky Balboa.
A compulsive gambler.
This is my night! I'm rolling like a hunchback doing somersaults! Yes!
An exotic tourist.
I feel like a fugitive. It's like quicksand. The more you struggle, the deeper you sink.
An ugly American.
Call this a police car? And a boil removed from my ass bigger than this.
A pretty American.
East Coast.
Yes, New Jersey.
I'm so sorry.
An irresistible charmer.
From the moment I first saw you, the light shimmering off your safety deposit box.
A countess.
But if the police investigate, they'll discover it wasn't you I was in bed with.
An inspector to catch the killer.
Lives are at the stake.
I'll do anything you ask. Anything you want. Foreplay.
Pitiful lives, but lives nevertheless.
And a clever canine who saw it all.
The dog is the key.
Do you have the dog's papers?
It's their dog.
You got a problem.
Murder most foul.
It's him.
This is the man.
It was this couple.
Help me back. We gotta get out of here.
Right.
I'm out.
In a movie most funny.
A woman is trying to kill a dog.
We have found the elusive dachshund.
He is my dog, but just since yesterday.
So what else?
You will need an attorney, monsieur.
What I need is an agent.
John Candy, James Belushi, Sybil Shepherd, Sean Young, Richard Lewis, Ornella Muti, Giancarlo Giannini, Napoleon as Napoleon, and George Hamilton as Alfonso de la Peña.
Okay, Tan Boy, you're coming with me.
Please, do not harm me, I beg of you. My face is my fortune.
Once Upon a Crime.
Yes! Yes, I love it, I love it, I love it.
The who's who of whodunits.
We're back from jet setting around Monte Carlo, folks.
Ooh, indeed, indeed.
Once Upon a Crime. The crime is now in the bag. The criminals have been found.
Was your mind blown, Mr. Nelson, with the levels of the puzzle of the mystery of the movie?
You know how before we were talking about how I prefer mysteries that are not plot heavy? This movie will never be mistaken for a plot-heavy movie, so I guess I'll give it that.
It's a character piece. It's a deep character study.
As far as it goes, it was a character piece. You are correct. It was all based on the characters, leading to me to decide that maybe I don't like character mysteries so much. But let's dive in before I give away everything. So let's take it back. This is about the time we go through like all the bad memories and things that we got wrong. I'm guessing there were none. I think you pretty much called it. So
yeah, I mean, I held a fair bit back of my specific memories of the plot of the movie, given it being a mystery movie and a comedy. I didn't want to both ruin the jokes and also ruin any sort of level of surprise of the mystery.
Ruin the mystery, I say, with air quotes around each word.
I mean, it's a fairly lazy mystery. It's not really anything shocking. It's obviously much more a device to have the comedy.
Have the comedy, the sweet comedy.
The stuff I had really remembered before seeing the movie, which stuck out again, is I think some of the better parts. Like I vividly remember John Candy as Augie Marasco walking police officers through retracing his steps of the evening where he's lying.
Right.
And sort of walking them, and they're like, oh, somebody was climbing outside. Was that you? And he's like, oh, yeah, yes, of course it was me. It's this goofy comedy scene where he's like climbing scaffolding and walking over like banisters and shit.
And the and French like, police are willing to let him fall to his death just to keep lying to him.
It's very silly. But he ends up in this random room and they're like, and this is where you ended up? And he's like, yeah, of course it was. And they're like, how convenient, the room where Madame Van Dugan was murdered. Like, and for some reason, I just always remember that of like how super dumb it was that he, in trying to clear his own name, wanders like right. out the window and right into the murder room. That right. always struck me as quite funny. And I remembered other stuff like Sean Young and Richard Lewis sort of they, I think, give some of the funnier stuff of like sort of freaking out. I think all the best jokes in the movie are like people in these situations where they're just cartoons, like eyes going out and freaking out about crazy shit. Usually it's finding a body or
right.
Jim Belushi and Cybill Shepherd. Like there's that scene where they open the suitcase he stole randomly to make up for his right. lost gamblings, and it's a chopped up woman, and Cybill Shepherd's like, ah, they're just like,
I
freaking
gotta
out
say,
and
I mean, while you're speaking of, you know, before the, in the first half of the podcast, I was taking you to task for making fun of Jim Belushi and as compared to the hilarity of his brother. I said, oh, Jim Belushi puts in good work. This is not one of them. He may be the single most irritating thing to me about this movie. In sure. a movie Richard Lewis is in, and he still is not. I'm still not high on him right now either. So, but yeah, I was really like waiting for Jim Belushi to bring the funny, and he was annoying me quite for every
he's
time.
Very intentionally irritating. Like his character's meant to be an asshole that you root against.
Yeah, but it's just like I mean, the only funny thing that started happening is at some point Cybill Shepherd just starts popping him in the face,
right.
and that was the funniest thing. He's like, oh well. Good, somebody's hitting him in the face. I'd like to. So and Cybill Shepherd, I mean, I don't know, she's one of those like hit or miss for me. She was fine in this. It kind of reminded me of seeing her on Moonlighting, you know, when she was, you know, I keep forgetting that.
Oh,
she
I've
did
never seen that.
Oh yeah, well, I just keep forgetting that she ever did comedy, because she's so like serious most of the time, and like dead serious. So I had totally forgotten about the Moonlighting years, but this sort of brought me back to that. But even so, she was still, I don't know, I feel like she was sort of wasted, because I thought she was actually putting in a performance, but it sort of got, I don't know, glossed over for
sure.
other funny, quote unquote.
I really enjoy the scene with her where her husband basically tells her to fuck off. Like they sort of have this dynamic where he's an abusive husband. She's sort of like this wife that's not come into herself or seems very reserved.
Well, yeah,
they
start off the movie with her being like sort of mousy, and her, you know,
yeah.
she's wearing the glass, you know, of course that she's all that glasses, and you know, she's supposed to be kind of mousy or whatever, but it's Cybill Shepherd, so of course you're not fooled for a second. But what was interesting
right.
is she was actually putting in the performance to match that, and I was like, oh, is she going to be sort of like mousy through the whole movie? But then within like 10 minutes, she had
was
all dolled up, and then she was the Cybill
yes.
Shepherd we've come to know, and you know, and she was kind of funny in the casino when she's sort of dolled up and she still hasn't like come into her, you know, hitting Jim Belushi in the face moment, but like, yeah, I don't know. I was kind of disappointed that she dropped that, because I was like, oh, I've never actually seen Cybill Shepherd act like anything but Cybill Shepherd before.
Sure,
so.
Sure. I enjoy the part where she comes out to the casino floor, is dolled up, and then her husband's like, go away. You're jinxing me. That
right.
face is jinxing me. And she goes over to this other table, and this guy, Mr. Papadopoulos or whatever, like gentlemen from Greece, they have this whole mini movie scene where it's like she's gambling and he's showing her the roulette table, and it's meant to be this kind of big character turn for her. And I think the reason she gets all boisterous through the rest of the movie is like she's won this like $500,000
right.
and now has emancipated herself from her shitty husband and freed herself with money or something. But there's just a really funny joke in there where he's like, oh, please make a bet for me. And she's like, okay. And then he wins, and he's like, oh my gosh, you won. That's amazing. Hands her like 2,000 francs. And she's like, listen, I don't know what hookers look like in Monte Carlo, but I'm a housewife. We do it for free or whatever. Like,
that was the most subtle joke in the whole movie, that
yeah.
one. And again, Cybill Shepherd delivering it. That one I thought was actually clever because, again, she was sort of throwing it away. And that's because every other
right.
joke was like,
oh, it's very hammy.
Was like just this shy of like the actor looking at the camera and going, right, folks? So her kind
well,
of.
It's a very. Silly movie, like in a way that I obviously loved when I was young, like as a kid, and I still enjoy now, but like it's not subtle. Like there's a joke from John Candy where his wife is like, oh, when your father had a heart attack or he died of a broken heart. And then John Candy's response is like, the man was 600 pounds and ran in a marathon. What did you expect would happen? Which is just like ludicrous. Like that obviously didn't happen. This is some random take there. John Candy said some crazy shit.
Right.
Like that seems to be the vibe of the movie. Like very silly, very cartoonish. Yeah.
Well, and I didn't, you had said that it was Eugene Levy, but I had totally like kind of spaced on the fact that he was one of the creators of Schitt's Creek, which I have not seen.
Correct.
But is apparently,
I haven't seen it either.
It's enjoying quite a following right now, and people who are very broken up about the show having ended. So I guess he and his son put that together. I would not have known that Eugene Levy had it in him while watching this movie, although he was in it and he was kind of funny in his cameo.
Yes, that's a very like sketch comedy scene where it's Jim Belushi and Eugene Levy is making a cameo as like the croupier who's making change or whatever at the casino. And it's like, change $50. And they do this whole thing where he pulls out a dusty old, like, right. we got to go to the kids' chips or something.
Yeah, these are the kiddie casino chips. And, you know, it's not enough for this high rollers thing. And he blows dust off of it. That was kind of funny.
And Eugene Levy's shooting him all these looks like, you pathetic piece of shit. Like, yeah, that was, I think in a way, like when it was multiple comedy people doing it at the same time, it worked on that sketch level.
Yeah,
but the movie tried
that.
To sort of mix, obviously, people like John Candy and, you know, very comedy heavy people with sort of more serious actors like the Inspector or Sean Young or Cybill Shepherd or whatever, you know, like we're less like the comedy types.
Well, Sean Young, I don't know. I keep thinking to myself, it's like, yeah, but she did Blade Runner. And I was like, yeah. And that's apparently the only movie she decided to act in, because every time I see her, it's usually like in a movie like this. And she's usually pretty broad, and she's usually like kind of doing the winky winky sketch comedy kind of thing. And I don't think she's really all that good at it. So in this movie, I was just kind of like, oh, okay, we're back to that. I was kind of hoping for better from her. And
I don't know what it is. I've always really liked Sean Young, and I have no,
because you know, she dresses up as Catwoman at the drop of a hat, brother.
No, it's like, I don't know. I don't know why. I've always loved her in pretty much any performance she does. I think I kind of have a crush on her. That's, I'll confess.
I mean,
for sure.
Everybody has a crush on her.
I don't find her, for some reason, I find her very charming in this movie. This kind of her and Richard Lewis thing. Like, yeah. I don't know. It always really worked for me.
Yeah, I didn't really. Well, again, Richard Lewis in this movie is just doing the same shtick that, sure, I don't like him doing in any other movie. I don't know. The only thing about him that I find riveting is his hair. That giant mullet that he's got is amazing.
Didn't like him pretending to be an Italian man while calling the cops and saying, my name's a Rocky Balboa. You gotta find the body.
Right. That was funny. That was a joke that happened.
I liked it.
I know you did. Well, I think, dear listeners, that we have, in the 5 years we've been doing this podcast, I think it's been established that John Longino appreciates a broader sense of comedy than I do. So,
sure.
No surprise there.
You know, much like how I live my life, I like my food spicy. I like my movies ridiculous. Like, there's just something subtle I'm not a huge fan of. Like, I like extremes and crazy, and this movie is very extreme, very cartoonish, very kind of wild, and I don't know. I find it very charming, but I can understand. I mean, obviously, while we're watching the movie, we kind of get a vibe, and, you know, there wasn't exactly, like, some fucking gut-busting going on the other end, so I understood kind of where we were at.
Fairness, I didn't think, I mean, I've seen you in Animal House and the Ernest movies, and you were, like, you know, chuckling here and there, but you weren't exactly busting a gut either, which I thought was
interesting. It's interesting. I was laughing, but I kind of discovered upon rewatching this movie, while it is a comedy and I do find things funny about it, it's, my appeal is less like, oh, this is so fucking hilarious, and more like it's a very comfort foody charming to me. I think that's like it's got like, they're in Rome and they're in Monte Carlo and the whole score is just like,
and it's like pretty people and funny people having fun, and like it's just like a fun, lighthearted movie. So I guess if I had, you know, it's like kind of popcorn fare, basically.
Right.
Like, it, for me, it's not about it being side-splittingly hilarious. I think it just makes me kind of happy for some reason.
Well, I could actually see there was a part of me that was watching that and wondering, this might, or not even wondering, just like observing that, like, this might be the type of movie that like a 10, 11 year old would adore, because for an adult, it's just like, oh, come on. But a kid would feel like he's getting away with something, because the humor's just naughty enough, and it's just kind of edgy enough. It's like, oh my God, everybody's finding dead bodies in suitcases. It's very, I mean, it's the kind of movie that only a 10-year-old would think was funny, really. And so I could actually see that, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that stuck, too. Like, seeing it at 11,
yes.
I really enjoyed it then.
Yes.
I think as an adult, I can go, well, obviously this movie has some flaws. But yeah, I think it is that childhood joy.
Right.
Like there are tense, in air quotes, tense scenes where they're finding bodies and like creepy music's playing, and he's seeing George Hamilton in the bushes hiding with a close up on his eyes, like a light on him and stuff. And that's all stuff that plays pretty tame as an adult. But as a child, like, I was, you know, my heart was racing. It was a little tense. Like, it seemed kind of scary to me.
Well, sure. And yeah, I mean, as an adult, you look at it and it's, I mean, the whole movie has like the veneer of harmlessness, whereas like I could see a kid being more invested in that. So that actually makes a lot of sense to me.
And stuff like all this discussion of like how long did he make love to his wife, like it's pretty tame now, but at 11 I was definitely like, oh, this is like naughty, you know?
Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, there are some leaps of logic that I don't think they even expect an adult maybe to get past, because, like, there's a point where there's two things that really kind of got me. One is, at one point, Jim Belushi's down and out. He's lost all his money, as, you know, was heavily forecast since the beginning of the movie. And he's wandering around. You know, the last time we saw him, he was, you know, trading barbs with John Candy, and suddenly he's out wandering the streets. And then he says, oh, I would take anything. A bag or a suitcase full of money would be great. And then he looks up, sees a suitcase, which we all know is, oh, that's Sean Young's suitcase, but you might not want it because she left it at a crime scene. And he says, oh, thank you, Jesus. And I'm like, oh, well, at some point, I guess the murderer for some reason stuffed money in there, so okay, I'll go along with it. And then he takes the suitcase, takes it back to his hotel room, and then continues on his merry way of being like, oh, my wife's going to kill me. I lost all the money, and I have this suitcase. And he hasn't tried to open it yet, which, by the way, Sybil Shepherd snaps it right open. So it's like he could have taken it the 10 paces, opened it up, realized there was a dead body, and said, oh, not for me, thanks. So once that happened, I was like, okay.
Well, then you wouldn't get that amazing scene with Sybil Shepherd screaming her head off and just running around doing like a Three Stooges thing.
Right, exactly. You wouldn't get the rest of the movie. And so that was the first leap of logic. The second leap of logic, which I mean, the suitcase, at least they sort of tried to pass off as like, oh, he's just so in his head, he didn't bother to look and see what he was stealing for no good reason. Sean Young at some point disappears because, you know, she was, you know, Richard Lewis, you know, there's this convoluted, like, Richard Lewis goes back to the house where they saw the crime. He gets arrested. She disappears. And then the next time we see her, she's in the bay with the dog trying to kill it.
Right.
Which is kind of funny, except it doesn't make any sense that she's trying to. I mean, it makes sense if you think, I guess, that, well, when we find the dog, we find the killer. But I don't know. There was something about, like, the logic of her trying to kill a dog in broad daylight on the middle of a lake that I was sort of like,
well, it's literally just for the sight gag of George Hamilton's with another, you know, rich old lady who is looking through binoculars and seeing Sean Young hitting his dog. And then it hard cuts to her like being a mugshot taken sopping wet. It does make no sense at all, especially considering earlier in the film she got rid of this dog by just kind of putting it on a bus and walking away.
Yeah. I mean, there was something about, I don't know, there was something, a way that we hadn't seen her in a little bit, and the way that we suddenly are reintroduced to her, it was kind of jarring.
The word is convenient.
No, it was actually kind of jarring. It wasn't convenient. I was just sort of like, well, because they don't even show that it's Sean Young. You just have to sort of pick up, like, because at first you just see her batting the water with an oar, and then you see that it's the dog, and then you realize, oh, that must be Sean Young, because you'd never really see her face, and which makes me think that it was like a stunt person doing it or something, and they never could show her face. But like the suitcase and that moment, like, really, like, hard pushed me out of the movie. And I was like, okay, well, I again, a kid wouldn't even question that, I'm sure.
The reason I say convenient is it's just like you said, I'm sure the writer's sitting there, oh man, we haven't seen Sean Young in a while. How do we get her back into this? Well, I'm writing this scene with George Hamilton. I guess I'll just put her, where are they? The ocean? Great. Oh, she's hitting an oar. Fantastic.
Oh, he happens to look up. Yeah. Well, it was going for that, like, French farce thing. Which, sure. I guess it was actually based on a French movie, a previously made French movie.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I looked it up. And apparently, this is the weird one to me, it spawned a Bollywood remake, I guess you'd call it. But it's sort of like the Psycho remake, where they did, like, apparently, like, a shot-for-shot, frame-for-frame remake.
Holy crap. I didn't know. There's a Bollywood Once Upon a Crime?
Yeah, so you need to
I have to see that.
Get thee to a Blockbuster right away, and you check that one out. I forget the name of it, but you can find
I'll just go to India Sweets and Spices and pick it up for $1, like a ripped DVD.
John Candy, George Hamilton, I enjoyed watching them. I feel like they sort of underused them, because John Candy, certainly, I feel like he can do a lot, and they sort of just threw these terrible gags at him.
I thought George Hamilton's actually quite funny in it. Like, he's really good.
Well, he's acting, for one thing, which threw me off completely. I mean, the whole gag about George Hamilton is that he's not really, even he himself will say, well, I'm not really an actor, I'm just kind of handsome. And so he just acts himself. So for him to, like, put on an accent and, you know, sort of, like, you know, be working the eyebrows and acting a fool is like, there was something to that. I was like, oh, that's charming. Look at him acting.
I'm curious, because it obviously seems like the movie didn't engage with you a terrible amount. Like, what were the parts you really liked, or what was, like, a standout moment for you?
I mean, to be perfectly honest, I didn't really like anything, but there was, most of it was just kind of, I mean, it sounds like I'm just hating this thing. I was just sort of, like, nonplussed.
I tried to throw you a volleyball there, you can spike it into the ground.
Well, I already said I like George Hamilton and John Candy, and I mean, well, and the guy playing the police inspector, I like you say, I recognize him, but I can't remember what from. He was good too, and there came a point in this movie where, like, he's gotten all the people, our American actors, he's got them all sitting there and fucking lying their asses off and, you know, pointing fingers at each other. This is the farcical part that was actually about to work. And meanwhile, the detective is like, oh, but the servants have this story, and they lied because they're the ones who actually did it. And I was like, oh, this is great. Okay, we're actually on to something. And then they just cut it off, and that's it. No more like... Like, they didn't even go into a motive, and I was like, whoa, that was abrupt. And so, yes. Because I was, like, really enjoying the moment where because you can see where it's kind of leading, because everybody's fucking just walking themselves into their grave and pulling the dirt over them. So if you're enjoying that, then that's the part that's funniest. But you also kind of get the feeling of, like, oh, the police detective's got something else in mind, because it's all kind of rolling over him at this point. He's, like, leading people into spots, but he's not, like, gotcha-ing them like he should if he really believes they did it. So when you see him kind of like, yeah, I kind of knew all along that it wasn't you dumb shits and it was this, you know, old couple or whatever, I was like, oh, this is this is the traditional mystery thing, and this is where we break it open and, you know, we get a few chuckles out of it. Nope, they just say, oh, it's the old couple, and they treated it like a major revelation, and I was like, oh shit, and then just cut away from it, and I was like, well, a motive would be just anything, just the, yeah, she one time threw a brick at them, you know what I mean, just anything.
Well, it's not terribly well explained, but the ending seems to suggest that the dog is the heir to this woman's fortune, so one could ascertain that this, the help here, killed her to claim the dog and therefore her money.
Right.
That would be the, I guess, basic motivation. But they don't outright state it. I agree.
Yeah.
And then it's not even that clear that the dog is getting the money until, like, the very end.
Well, yeah, because they keep making jokes about the dog getting the money before they explain, oh, the dog's getting all the money. They say it outright, but they've said it after they've told at least two jokes about, like, oh, that dog's got more stock than I do, or whatever.
Right.
And I was a little confused by that. I was just like, oh, just because the dog's a rich person's dog.
Yeah,
I
wonder if they cut out some exposition about the dog earlier just because it was not funny or didn't matter to the
I
jokes
wonder,
or
but then they had this, but it was all leading up to the, you know, detective and his, you know, bumbling. Okay, I did like the lighting stuff. Where the detective was always telling his assistant to light his cigarette, and the dude's lighter never worked. And there was one time where, after like three or four times of it not working at all, and this long awkward him flicking it for minutes at a time, then he goes right up, and the flame just shoots like 3 feet high. that was kind of funny. Anyway, the assistant comes up to him at the end, and the detective says, oh, well, it's so strange that a woman would leave $20 million to her dog. Why would she do that? And I guess, and you know, and then they sort of puzzle through that, oh, whoever gets the dog gets the money. Oh, George Hamilton's got the dog. Oh, shit. But it seemed like all setting up for that joke. So then why make three jokes before it about, like, oh, well, that dog's richer than me or whatever, you know? I don't know. See, that's the kind of, like, shit in movies like this where I'm like, okay, you see, you're going into this ass backwards. You got, you know, and you should know better, Eugene Levy. You know how a joke is set up. Come on now.
I think the most illuminating thing for me that you said was about how you could see how a child would really like this movie. And I think if anything, I might have unlocked the mystery of why it's so fun to me.
Right.
Maybe 11 is like the exact right age to enjoy Once Upon a Crime to its full full taste. The fact that I recommended this movie for years to people and no one ever watched it, I can now walk away from this being like, yeah, that's fine.
That makes sense. Suddenly it all, like, illuminates.
Yeah, this ain't a must watch for anybody. Like, have fun with it, enjoy it if you do watch it. But now I can ease up on, like, this isn't some lost classic of cinema that no one knows about but me. It's like, oh no, this is a movie I really liked when I was a kid,
right?
And I now see why.
Well, then maybe that begs the question, and I think it's pretty obvious where I stand, but I'll say it out loud first because there doesn't seem to be much doubt.
Sure.
For me, Once Upon a Crime did not hold up, but I guess the question is to you, Longino, do you think that this movie held up?
Sure. I still really enjoy this movie and watching it, and it does make me happy to watch.
Okay.
But if I'm sitting here being honest, the legacy I had left it, which is like, this is a very funny, very intelligent mystery comedy movie in the vein of Knives Out or something, like, like, no, it's not. Like, I can be brutally honest. Like, no, it did not hold up to my memory of it. That doesn't mean I don't like it or I won't think fondly of it.
Right.
But it is not that great a movie. Like, just kind of straight up. Like, it's fun and it's funny and I enjoy it and it brings me, like, joy to remember liking it as a kid.
Right.
But no, it's not the movie I remembered, and that's fine.
All right. Well, we have an interesting proposition, folks, for the new
year.
Indeed,
we do.
We're going to watch, in January 2021, we're going to watch the movie Crash. The gag is we don't know which one. We are going to...
Oh, my goodness.
When we get to recording, we are going to flip a coin and decide that on the spot if we're going to watch the David Cronenberg cars crashing into each other and people having sex with other people's scars crash movie, or the Academy Award winning Paul Haggis movie where everything in LA is connected, Crash.
So we will do a live coin flip when we record the episode. So even when we start, we will not know which one we're doing until the moment arrives.
Yes. Until then, you can reach us at holduppodcast@gmail.com. You can go to holduppodcast.com. Go to our social medias and tell us what a great idea this is and how we should do much more like it. And until next time,
nobody move, nobody gets hurt.